Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. What's cracking? How are you? How was the weekend? Hope you're having a good day. It's great to have you here. I am in Southern California. I am live, and I am here where I've been the entire time, right in our Southern California-based studios. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Busy first half of the show. Ben Mesrick joins me next segment. But right now, we start hour number two. We are joined by a running back for the Cleveland Browns. He is a Pro Bowler. He was second in the league in rushing last season with 1,494 yards, nearly 1,800 yards from scrimmage last season. He had 8 touchdowns. He was a first-team All-SEC-er at Georgia. He was the 35th pick overall in 2018. He appears on behalf of Victory Gear and the Victory for Heroes program, which supports our nation's healthcare workers. He is Nick Chubb. Nick, it is so good to have you on. Before we get into the offseason, Nick, and what you're doing with Victory, how are you and everybody around you doing during this very unusual time, Nick?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on the show talking to you right now. And, just like everybody else, I'm just uncertain, not knowing what's happening. So for myself, I live in a small town, so I'm able to still go out and work out. My high school coach. So, not much changed for me, honestly. This is what I do in every offseason. So, for me, it's been the same. But, for my family, they're not being able to go to work, and people I know are, cut back on hours and, things like that. Just unusual time. Not really knowing what's going to happen next. But, I teamed up with Victory in order to, help the healthcare workers now who work all these hours and who are fully committed to make sure we stay safe and healthy out there. And, we are able to provide insoles for their feet, during the long hours of standing up. They have comfort and support in their shoes, and their feet feel good while they're working all these hours, out there protecting us.
Good for you. What a great cause. And, Nick, I want to say it's an extreme pleasure to have you on the program. I've been looking forward to it. It's good to have you. You mentioned that you're getting your work in at your high school. Your coach there, Doyle Kelly, he was at Cedar Town High School when you played. He said that last offseason you were lifting and working out with the kids. So this is not just because of the pandemic. You would still go back there and work with those kids. He says that you're always taking time to talk with the current players and give them advice. Why is that something that's so important to you?
I think for me, most just coming from the small town I came from, people, just older guys who lived there before would always say, I should move away. I never get attention there. College coaches don't come looking at this small town. I'll never make it and things like that. So, that just motivated me to go harder in high school. And so now I use myself as an excellent example for the kids who still go there. No matter if we do come from a small town, you can still fulfill your dreams. You can still play college at D1 and you can still, go to NFL. So I'm using myself as an example for them to keep them, keep their head on straight and not listen to the outside world. Just keep focusing on what's important.
Nick Chubb is joining us. I'm going to talk to you about the Browns in 1 minute, but you mentioned what it was like to grow up in a small town. You played your college ball at Georgia, of course. As some people know, you grew up in Cave Spring and Cedar Town, Georgia, but a huge part of your family's history is Chubb Town. It's a town that was founded by 8 brothers who were free men in the 1830s. What does Chubb Town and the history of your family mean to you?
Yeah, it's really a neat story. My black ancestors to be free during that time, and not only be free, but to create their own city during that time, and for it to be successful. And it means a lot. It just shows me that there's no limit to what I can do if they endured all the pain and all the struggle during those times to run their own city. Then I have no excuse to do anything now when times are a little different than they were back then. So it just instilled in me just the hard work and dedication and to not ever, settle or let anything get in my way.
Cleveland Browns running back Nick Chubb is joining us. You had that big rookie season, and then you had an absolutely huge season after that. As you look back, what was the biggest difference for you between year one and year two?
Year two, I was just more familiar with the offense. I was more comfortable. I knew everything, everything that was going to happen before it happened. Just, study more. I was, coached up on things a lot more. And it was just easy for me. It was just a lot more natural. Everything was just flowing for me, and I saw things a lot quicker, and, it worked out.
Nick, you had a great year. I think the team obviously went into the season with a lot of hype, a lot of expectation. Maybe things did not come together the way that they were expected to come together. As you look back on last season, and I understand you're looking ahead, but if I were to get you to look back on last season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Nobody's ever asked me that yet. So, that's a tough question. I mean, like you said, it was just a lot of hype going into the season. We thought we were we thought it was gonna, you know, happen differently. But I said this before, I think we thought we were a lot better than we were, and we thought it was gonna just happen for us. We didn't actually put the work in. So we just thought, we got this guy, man, we're straight. We don't need to actually work. It's just gonna happen for us because, I mean, we're just so naturally talented. I mean, that just goes back to the old saying, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work. So I think that's exactly what it was with us. I mean, we had all the talent in the world, but we just didn't, you know, put the work into it.
Nick Chubb joining us. I think that's a really honest answer. That's a really candid response. Does it feel like it's going to be different this time? Do you feel like the team learned from that and is going to move on and go on from that?
I honestly do. I think we saw the results of not working last year and just the disappointment that we all had. I mean, you talk to anybody on our team, we're all just disappointed in ourselves from, you know, every aspect of not working harder, allowing things to happen that shouldn't happen. And, yeah, man, but we made some changes and we got new coaches in. I feel like they're, you know, great coaching staff, going to do everything right for us, put us in a position to win. And so, I mean, we just got to see. You know, it's tough right now because I know we're so eager to get back, get to work, so we can get that bad taste out of our mouths from last year. But we're having to wait. But we're still working on, you know, virtual offseason on our iPads with Zoom and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, we're still putting the work in, just not together.
We're talking to Nick Chubb. It's a very different time. Now, your teammates talk about the fact that they've never played with a guy who goes harder in practice than you do, that you do things one way, which is all out all the time. You know, some other guys might take it easy in practice and save themselves for Sunday. So where does your work ethic and that all-out approach come from? Every day, all day.
Yeah, I mean, that's just who I was from the beginning. I mean, it's always worked for me. In high school, my coaches pushed me to, you know, finish the run and do everything full speed, 100%. And, you know, some guys do look at it as like, you know, you got to save yourself for Sunday. But, I mean, me, I just get into a rhythm of finishing strong. And, you know, on Sundays, on game day, I don't have to think about it. It just comes natural to me. And even in college, I had a great coach, Brian McClendon. I think he's coaching the NFL somewhere. He was in South Carolina last year. But he's really the person who told me, you know, you got to go hard every single day. You touch the field, you know. No excuses. You're not hurt. You're not banged up. When you touch that field, give it all you got, 100%. And, man, I did that. And ever since then, it's been working for me. So I'm going to stick to what I know.
Hey, Nick, what about the Pro Bowl experience? I mean, whereas the team may not have had the success you were looking to have, you had a great individual year. What was that Pro Bowl experience like for you? And were there certain guys that you were looking to spend some time with and maybe pick their brains?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I think back to when I was a kid and just watching the Pro Bowl, and then you know, one day I'm like, I'm blinking, I'm playing, and man, it's unreal. And you know, sometimes I sit back and really think about it. You know, I am just amazed at, you know, things I've been able to do. But it's been fun. You know, I got to go really with the running backs. I got, well, you know, the guy who beat me in the rushing title, Derrick Henry, and not only that, but his college, you know, partner. They went together, I don't think, at the same time, but Mark Ingram. So just hanging out with those guys. You know, Mark, he's a vet, so they would pick his brain about things. Just see how they, you know, what they look for when they run the ball and things like that.
Hey, Nick, before you go, let me ask you this. The team, aside from the coaching change, which you referenced already, the team went out and added some talent on the line, both in free agency and in the draft. What do you make of those additions, and how much are you looking forward to running behind those guys?
Oh, yeah, I think they did a great job in offseason free agency and in the draft picking up guys. They picked up two, you know, tackles who are, I think, unbelievable. And I think a lot of those guys can't wait to, you know, get on the field and practice with them and go in the game with them. I know they're eager to get out there too. So, I mean, it's just exciting. I think our coaching staff and our GM did a great job in the offseason of picking up new talent.
Nick, you hit this at the top. I want you to hit this on the way out too. You're working with Victory Gear today. In case somebody missed this or doesn't know, can you lay it out for me one more time? What exactly is that about and what are you doing with Victory Gear?
Yeah, I teamed up with Victory Gear, you know, Victory for Heroes. It's a program. You know, this is a give back program to all the caregivers and the healthcare workers who are out there, you know, putting life on the line for us during these times, and, you know, making sure we're safe and you know, medical and nursing and all that stuff. So what Victory does with the it's an insole, and it's like very comforting and very supportive and stable, and it helps, you know, the healthcare workers who are spending all these long hours on their feet, standing up, working all this. It gives them comfort during their long days, and it's just very supportive. And just a way we can, you know, find a way to give back to the people out there working for us right now.
Well done. Excellent. He's a running back for the Cleveland Browns, a Pro Bowler, second in the league in rushing last season with nearly 1,500 yards and eight touchdowns as well. First team All-SEC-er at Georgia. Nick, it is great to have you on the show. Appreciate you very much, and thanks for doing that.
All right. Thank you.
Nick Chubb. Jungle debut. Thought that went extremely well. Appreciate that, Nick. Thank you. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we've had Therese Paylor. We had Nick Chubb. I've got Ben Mezrek coming up momentarily. Also, not that you need to concern yourself with this, but a bit of a change on our clock, which means I get in earlier at the top of the hour. What that means to you is this. I do an interview at the top of the hour frequently, and then on the back end of that, you may have a chance to slide right in. Ordinarily, the normal listener wouldn't even know that, but if you kind of play that clock game and you want to pick your spots, then you would know. Now would be a good time to call. 1-800-636-8686. I talked about the first half of The Last Dance. I've got thoughts on the other two episodes. Actually, the second episode. They had episode 5, episode 6. I want to get into Andy Dalton and what that signing from the Dallas Cowboys represents and what it does not represent. It's a really good signing for them. But understand why that's good signing for them. It's a good signing for them because they now have a really good backup quarterback. It's not a good signing because it allegedly gives them leverage against Dak Prescott or a hedge in the event that they can't sign him. Or maybe they want to rip the franchise tag from him. I mean, come on, stop. That's not what that is. The only thing about that, and I like the signing a lot for Dallas, the only thing about that that's a little disappointing to me is that Jason Garrett is not the head coach. Yes, I said it. Yes, I know I spent a lot of time questioning why he was their head coach. That was before they brought in a ginger backup. You imagine the ginger head coach meeting the ginger backup at the airport to pick him up? And two gingers in the same car? In the same quarterback room? On the same franchise? Be the best thing ever. Man, do I miss Jason Garrett. I didn't know they were going to bring Andy Dalton in. At least not when they fired Garrett. Too bad. Man, that'd be so awesome. Mike McCarthy should do the right thing and bring in Garrett. Better yet, quit and let Garrett be the head coach. How much would you give to see those two gingers standing side by side on the sideline, yapping it up during games? Man, would have been so great. Hey, Jera. You want us to look at you? You want us to talk about you? Then put the two of those gingers on the sideline side by side, and I will look at you and talk about you all day long. Also, because we are in the midst of this pandemic, we've got people kind of sitting around chopping it up, telling stories, telling great stories, stories that ordinarily might not see the light of day. And we found another one. And it involves Jamarcus Russell, and I know you clones love that. Mitchell Trubisky does not get his fifth-year option picked up by the Bears. No big surprise there. So where does that leave him, and where does that leave them? And is there any way this guy beats out Nick Foles? And is there any way that we all beat out the Murder Hornets? I hope so. I don't like the way they sound at all. The Murder Hornets. Got some reaction before I go to Ben Mezrek. Dear Jim, just giving a shout-out to National Star Wars Day. Sincerely, dude who told you he watches Star Wars on a loop and does not do social life. Let's go to Syracuse. John.
I haven't got much to get to here, but 40 times watching a rock band is nothing compared to 1,481. That is the number of times I've watched Star Wars episodes 4, 5, and 6.
1481? Are you serious?
Seriously. 1482 if I count watching episode 6 last night.
Hey, John, how often do you watch this thing? Like every single day? 3 times a day? How could you get to 1481?
Figure out when those movies came out, Jim. The first one in 1978. What is it now? 2008. Do the math. It doesn't take that long to add up to that much, especially when you have no social life. I don't do social life. I stay inside and just keep my nose clean.
I guess that's one way to look at it. You stay indoors. You watch each episode hundreds of times. That keeps you out of trouble. You keep your nose clean. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is you're a loser. I'm not picking. I'm just saying there are separate ways of looking at it. Eddie in Santa Paula, that call was made in 08. So go ahead and add another 1,000 or so viewings, or 10,000. Eddie in Santa Paula tweets, Chubb, keeping it 100, what a straight-up G. No excuses. That was an extremely candid response from a guy that does not do a ton of media. Extremely stand-up guy. Very humble guy. Beloved teammate. I mean, I can go on and on about Nick Chubb. I was thrilled to have him on. So when I said, what kind of thoughts do you have about last year? And he said, you know, I haven't been asked that question. And then he gave you a straight-up thought about last year. We were not as good as we thought we were. You know, an incredible response, really. He is a great back. I mean, a special player. All-around back. Tremendous power. Can break tackles. Elusive as hell. And as Kevin Stefanski says, he's like a cultural setting guy. He sets the culture and the tone just by the way he works every single day. I'm really happy that we had a chance to finally have him on. I think he is a special player. When we come back, Ben Mezrich joins us. Ben is a special author. Good friend of the program. One of my favorite guys. Ben Mezrich joins me on the other side of this. And then we are wide open the rest of the way. And I've got some killer content. Really good content for you. Can you match it? Pick up the phone. Hit me up. Step it up. It is smack off season. 1-800-636-8686. Ben Mezrich, when we come back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Tonight, starting at 6:30 Eastern and 3:30 Pacific, CBS Sports Network tees off a night of golf, starting with course record with Michael Breed, followed by a double dose of Nick Faldo. And then we end the night with a lot of laughs and a friendly rivalry on the green with off the hosel. I am efforting Ben Mezrich, and there is a ton to talk to Ben about. A ton to talk about. He is a jungle legend. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is a producer and a writer on the smash hit Billions. He is the author of Bringing Down the House, The Accidental Billionaires, The 37th Parallel, and Bitcoin Billionaires, to name just a few. Ben has also published a serialized novel, The Mechanic, in the Boston Globe, every day for 2 weeks. We have a ton to cover with Ben Mezrich. Ben, before we get into everything that you've got going on right now, I've got to ask, how are you and Tanya, your kids, and everybody around you doing in the middle of this pandemic?
Oh, man, we're doing pretty good. I mean, it's not all that different than my regular life. So, I mean, I'm locked down. We're bunkered down, it's crazy, right? But we're doing okay, doing a lot of writing, so that's good.
It is crazy, and you are doing a lot of writing. Ben, there is so much to cover with you right now. I don't even know where to start, but why don't we start with season 5 of Billions? Well, then you've got the new serialized novel in the Globe. We have UFOs. We have a virus. We have Bitcoin. We have more. But you talked about how your life hasn't changed that much. A while back, let me start right here. You wrote an ebook about a virus hitting New York. What inspired you at that time? And unfortunately, how accurate were you?
Yeah, so I don't necessarily recommend anyone read that book right now. But I wrote a book called Q, which is an ebook, which I started in 2002. And right after sort of the SARS epidemic, and it was about a coronavirus coming from China, hitting New York City and the quarantine response. And in my book, the virus was catching before you showed symptoms. And so the quarantine effort became quarantining people before they showed any symptoms. And it was weirdly very similar to what's happening, but much darker. So I wrote this dark dystopic kind of novel. I wrote it because I interviewed all these virologists and asked them what their greatest fear was. And unfortunately, it was almost exactly this. So that's what the book was about. It was called Q, and it came out, you know, I put it online, I think, about 3 years ago. So it's dark, though. It's very dark. Right. So, you know, only read it if you're in that kind of a mood.
It's dark and it's eerie. I mean, it's really eerie the way you lay that out and the way you call that. Now, as somebody who's paid a lot of attention to this topic and has written about this, how different, Ben, do you think life is going to be when this is over? Like, does life just go back to normal, or might we be looking at permanent changes in people's behavior?
I mean, listen, I'm an optimistic person at heart, and I think that, you know, people adapt pretty quickly. And I also think that these things don't run for very long. I mean, when you're caught in it, it feels really dark and insane. But looking back in history, none of these epidemics lasted, you know, lifetimes. They last a year or 2 years, and it seems like a crazy number. But the reality is, I would say a year and a half from now, it's going to be a crazy memory we all share. I really do. I think that, you know, it's going to be a difficult summer, different than we're used to. And then into the fall, we'll have some medications and we'll have a vaccine and we'll get out of it. I'm sticking with the optimism. I just don't see this lasting as long as the dark sort of premonitions say, but we'll see. But certainly right away, we have to be careful. I mean, on the other hand, I don't think it's, you know, anywhere near as deadly as we thought originally, but it's scary stuff. I mean, it's age, you know, related. So it's stratified over age. So the older you are, the worse it's going to be. But in general, I think things will get back to normal. You know, we'll see. Maybe a year. That's my guess.
Author Ben Mesrick joining us right now. Now, Ben, Billions had its season premiere last night. First off, what's it been like working on that program?
So I loved it. I mean, Billions is a show, you know, about the stuff that I write about. And it happened kind of out of the blue. Brian Koppelman, who is the writer-creator, and David Levine were basically on Twitter, and they had reached out to me because of my book, Bitcoin Billionaires, to talk about that book maybe becoming a movie. And while I was on the phone with Brian, he said, have you ever worked in television before? And I was like, well, I don't normally work with people. I don't usually even wear pants. I don't leave my house very often.
I don't work with people.
But he said, you know, I think you'd like it. Why don't you come into the writer's room, and can you be here, like, tomorrow? And so it was this crazy thing where all of a sudden I just went to New York and joined this writing room, and I had a blast. I mean, it was really fun to write about the characters, like Axe and Axe Capital. It's just a really great setting to write. And I managed to get some crypto in there, if people saw the premiere last night. And I had a blast. So I was there. I'm a consulting producer on the show, and I wrote an episode that's going to air in 2 weeks. So my episode airs in 2 Sundays. I love the show. I had a good time. I think it's writing for TV was very different than what I normally do. But being around other people, it was a learning experience. Like, I didn't know if you have to, like, raise your hand to go to the bathroom or how that works.
Right. It's good for you.
I haven't worked with people ever.
It's good for you to mix with people, Ben. I love those guys. I met those guys for the first time back in the 90s. I had a meeting with them. I've always loved them. It's an amazing show. I was thrilled to see you be a part of that. And you did work in some Bitcoin last night. So let me ask you this, a crypto presence, I should say. Where are you? How much has changed in the Bitcoin world in the past year? And what do you make of where Bitcoin is right now in terms of evaluation?
Yeah, so I wrote Bitcoin Billionaires about the Winklevoss twins and their crazy rise in Bitcoin. Bitcoin, it's actually doing pretty well, all things considered, considering the whole world is crashing. Bitcoin is back, you know, coaxing towards 9,000. It took a dip all the way down when this stuff first happened, which was unusual because the idea behind Bitcoin is it's like a hedge. The world collapses and people can move into Bitcoin because it's not tied, you know, to the market, supposedly, but it actually started to act a little bit weird for a while. Then there's this big event called the halving event, where the amount of Bitcoin that goes into the system is going down by half. So that should create a lower supply, and thus the price should rise. So you ought to see the price of Bitcoin rising. Listen, I don't recommend anything financial to anybody because I'm, you know, not an expert in those things, but I don't see any reason why the price of Bitcoin wouldn't go up. And honestly, as the world sort of hits chaotic things and you get nervous about other things, listen, if I were in Venezuela right now, I would much rather have Bitcoin than a Venezuelan dollar. And looking at the American dollar and how they're going to be printing it like paper to pay for all of this stuff, you would think Bitcoin would be a pretty safe bet. So similar to gold, I think Bitcoin and gold are two places where you might want to have a little bit of your money. But, you know, in the end, nobody knows anything, so we'll see. But I do think Bitcoin makes sense, and as we move forward, as long as there's a demand, the price should go up.
We're talking to Ben Mezrich. All right, so yesterday, your serialized novel, The Mechanic, made its debut in the Boston Globe, and going with a serialized novel in a newspaper is an old-school Charles Dickens approach. How did this idea come to be? And for those who do not know, what is The Mechanic about?
Yeah, so out of the blue, you know, like everyone else, you know, you're sitting in your bunker, scared to death about what's going on outside, and I got a call from the editor-in-chief of the Boston Globe, and Linda Henry, and the Henrys own the Globe, John Henry and Linda Henry, and they basically were like, you know, this is an old-school idea, but we were thinking it would be really cool to have a writer write a novel for us, and we'll publish it daily. And this is something like Dickens would do or Mark Twain would do, not normally what you would see someone like me do, but I thought about it, and I was like, this would be really cool if I could do like a complex, like Da Vinci Code type of thriller. And I'm not necessarily known for fiction, but I have written a fair amount of fiction, and I always wanted to be a thriller writer like, you know, Dan Brown or John Grisham or something. So I concocted this crazy thriller. They launched it on Sunday on the cover of the Sunday Globe, which was really neat. And it's been on the essentially in the newspaper and online on the cover. Today, two more. So basically two chapters are written or are published a day. And I'm really writing this book in like a 2-week period. So it is kind of insane.
Wow.
But I spent, you know, a week and a half plotting, planning, getting all the chips in order. So it's, I think people are going to be really into it. It's very sort of Boston. You know, it travels down the Freedom Trail, but it starts off just like bringing down the house and a card counter, getting caught up in something really crazy. So people who like my card counting books or like my other stuff are going to love it. And I'm doing it, you know, pro bono. I'm basically putting it in the Globe, and hopefully people will like it. So it's on the BostonGlobe.com. And listen, I don't know about you guys. I'm sick of reading about the coronavirus, and I feel like there needs to be something else. And I think it's a diversion. If you pick up the newspaper and, you know, everything's gloom and doom, but you can turn to this crazy thriller, maybe it'll cheer people up and make people happy. And it seems to be, people seem to really like it, and I love writing it. So I think it's going to blow people away. And I am getting a lot of calls from Hollywood about it, so it'll probably end up turning into something else down the road. But people should go to BostonGlobe.com and check it out. I think you got to subscribe to the newspaper or whatever, which ends up being cheaper than a book. But newspapers are good. I think we should be supporting local newspapers, so it's not a bad thing. So if you're sick of the coronavirus, you can read this crazy card-counting thriller and have fun with it.
Bravo. I love it, Ben. Ben Mezrich joining us. Ben, one last thought. I've always enjoyed our conversations, and especially when you have a new project. One of my favorites goes back to 2016 when the 37th parallel, The Secret Truth Behind America's UFO Highway, dropped. Last week, the Pentagon, of course, Ben, confirmed the videos of unidentified flying objects that had leaked a few years back, that they are in fact authentic. What was your reaction to that news?
I mean, listen, I know people think I'm crazy when I talk about UFOs. But the reality is there's no good reason not to believe in life and, you know, on other planets. And there's not a lot of reasons nowadays to believe that they couldn't have gotten here. So these Pentagon things that just got released, I mean, they were pretty interesting. You know, there definitely have been Navy pilots who saw something, and now they've got video of it. And I love how the Pentagon kind of just throws it out in the midst of all this craziness, because assuming, you know, it won't be the number one news story. And this is what I said when I was on your show. If aliens landed on the White House lawn, it wouldn't even be the top 5 craziest things that happened that day. And that's definitely true right now. And so this thing that got released, you know, wasn't even on the top of the newspaper. I mean, they literally released video of UFOs flying in front of Navy planes.
Seriously.
And so if they were drones, these guys would know they were drones. You know, these were not something that we can figure out. This was the Navy and the Pentagon saying, here's an unidentified flying object flying around. Now, I'm not saying it's aliens, but I am saying that's pretty weird, right? And so I love seeing that. If you read 37 Parallel, you'll know I'm willing to believe, as crazy as that makes me sound, but there's lots of craziness going on in this world right now, Jim, as you know. And I'm just sitting here in my bunker with Toby from Houston, you know, hanging out, checking out what's going on.
How many clones hit you with that, Ben? All of them? Listen, there you go, clones. You got him to say it. Go ahead. I'm giving a little ding. Ben referenced Toby in Houston. There you go. There you losers go. You got what you wanted. Ben's throwing you a bone.
I love the clones. I want the clones to read the Boston Globe. I think that would be If the clones hit BostonGlobe.com, it will be beautiful because that will be a wonderful thing. No, Jim, you're an awesome supporter of me. And as I've said many times, Bringing Down the House would not have been a successful book without you. And it's, I can say the same for most of my books. So we have a shared history that goes back a long time. And it's awesome to talk to you in this craziness.
Ben, you're my guy. The jungle loves you. I love you. You've been a very, very good friend of the program long before any of this happened. You've always stayed extremely loyal to us. Whenever you have a new project, not only do you come on to support or promote the project, but you always make us first, and I always appreciate that. I love what you're doing for the Boston Globe. Clones, let's be very clear about this. You just got your Toby in Houston reference from Ben Mesrick, so you need to go to the Boston Globe and read The Mechanic and support Ben in any way you can. Ben, stay safe. I appreciate you. Best to the family, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And have a good day. And keep it up. It's going to be fun.
You too, Ben. Keep it up. Stay strong. Stay safe. Ben Mesrick, jungle legend. Clones, you got what you wanted. A Toby in Houston reference. Hit up the Boston Globe and read The Mechanic. I'm fascinated by that. Like, Ben is prolific, but the fact that he's knocking out a serialized novel in 2 weeks and it shows up in the paper really is old school. Charles Dickens-like. I love it. Good job, Ben. When we come back, we are open the rest of the way. Open phones. I could go the rest of the show without a call. I might, in fact. I hope not. I can't. I've got that much content. But I would love to get one of you qualified for the Smack-Off. The Smack-Off is coming up on June 19th. So 46 days out. Keep in mind, 46 days is not the same as 46 shows. Much fewer shows. 46 days. In other words, you're on the clock and you're already running out of time, which means you need to get qualified with a golden ticket. Stay tuned. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Time now for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
My thanks to the great Ben Mesrick. I don't say that very often. The great Ben Mesrick. And you clones should probably hit him up on Twitter because he retweets all you clones. He's all about it. Most people kind of hold you clones at, like, arm's length. Not Ben. He loves you. He's all about you. He embraces you. So my thanks to Ben. I think I want to stay on topic because we were talking crypto. We were talking UFOs. We're talking the year 2020, where at this point I'm officially numb to everything. And that's not just the weekend tequila talking. Although I did bump into some of that. We are in the midst of a pandemic, right? What else is there to do? I'm talking about the World War III threats, the UFO sightings, the coronavirus pandemic talking. We're barely into the fifth month of this year. I can honestly say that if you told me Sasquatch was going to enter into the presidential race as a late third-party ad, I'd believe that. I mean, what the hell, right? Stranger headlines have already dropped, like this one from over the weekend. An actual headline, quote, "Murder hornets have made their way to the United States from Japan." I repeat, murder hornets have made their way to the United States from Japan. Right. Because, of course, they have. Why wouldn't they? What took so long? It's 2020. Murder hornets from Japan fit in perfectly to an absolutely cursed, absolutely bleeped up calendar year. Now, if you're thinking that maybe murder hornets is an exaggerated name for a harmless insect, you, of course, would be wrong. It's 2020. Are you not paying attention? Murder hornets are apparently exactly what they sound like. Hornets that murder. Now, before we get to that, let me tell you exactly what a murder hornet is. A murder hornet is the largest hornet in the world. This damn thing looks more like a bird than it does a bee. The biggest ones can get up to about 2 inches in length, which doesn't sound that big until you see one. And then you start having nightmares for the rest of your life. But But it's not just the size that makes this thing scary. It's also the fact that apparently they can fly up to 20 miles per hour. And they've got venom that can be lethal to humans. Oh, and this, their jaws are shaped like shark fins. And they're designed to decapitate honeybees. Because the sole purpose of a murder hornet is to behead bees and feed their thoraxes to their young. Awesome, right? But the murder hornet name did not come from biting the heads off of honeybees and snacking off their lifeless bodies. Now, you don't get that name from something like that. It came from the 50 people a year in Japan who die from these a-holes. And guess what?
Guess what?
Guess what?
Guess what?
For the first time ever, they're here. They're here in the U.S. The very first sighting of the murder hornet occurred in Washington State. Man, there's a lot of jacked up stuff going on in the Pacific Northwest right now, isn't there? They saw one in Washington State, and they saw it back in November. Nobody knows just how in the hell murder hornets got here, but that doesn't really matter right now, does it? What matters is containing them, because according to scientists, if they're not completely eradicated by the year 2022, then murder hornets are here to stay forever. Now, the good news is, a single sting from a single murder hornet is unlikely to kill you. The bad news is, they normally attack in groups, which sucks. Because people who've been stung say that it feels like, quote, hot metal driving into your skin. But why read about the pain of a murder hornet sting when you can hear it instead? Apparently there's some dude on the internet named Coyote Peterson who's made a living traveling around the world filming himself getting stung by the worst creatures imaginable. Think like Crocodile Hunter meets Jackass. So back in 2018, Coyote P went to Japan to find a murder hornet, aka a Japanese giant hornet, to get stung by. The video gets a massive bump over the weekend thanks to everybody scrambling to try to figure out what the hell this thing is. In a clip that has now been viewed 21 million times, Coyote catches a murder hornet, places it on his arm, and lets the damn thing impale him like a heroin junkie with its stinger.
I'm Coyote Peterson, and I'm about to enter the sting zone with the Japanese giant hornet. One, two, here we go, three. Ah! Oh, this thing's stuck in my arm! Oh!
Ooh. How bad is it?
Ah!
How bad is it? Listen to him.
Oh, searing pain! Absolute searing pain! There's where the stinger went in, right there. Did you not see how slow this thing was? Oh!
I see blood.
Ah! Oh my gosh! Ah!
That guy'd ask if homeboy is okay, but he's clearly not. The rest of that video is him rolling around on the ground for 5 minutes, screaming in pain. And if you think he's playing it up for the camera, check out the follow-up vid that he filmed the next day where his forearm is completely pink and swollen up to twice its normal size. So yes, that's the insect scientists have been trying to hunt down since November. That's the insect we are just now hearing about today. That is the insect that we need to eradicate in 2 years or less, or then it becomes embedded in the U.S., forever. Like I said, at this point, I'm numb. Like my man, Ben Mezrick, could probably write a novel about the attack of the giant killer insects, like in 5 minutes or less. Might as well get that out there too, because that's coming. You know that's coming. Of course, we'd be getting closer to being allowed to go back outside, which is what we're all hoping for. But look what's waiting for us. The murder hornets. You think it sucks being inside? Try going outside. All of a sudden, quarantine sounds pretty damn good. I'm telling you, this is 2020, and 2020 is drunker than all of us. And based on liquor sales, all of us are pretty drunk. But 2020 is drunker than all of us, and it simply will not go home. No, 2020 is slouched over the bar, ordering shot after shot after shot after shot. Hey, bartender. Hey, give me another shot of Murder Hornets, please. Make it a double. A shot of UFOs and a double shot of Murder Hornets. I'd ask 2020 what's next, but I don't really care. This thing came off the rails, came off the tracks a long time ago. Of course, the Murder Hornets are here.
How bad is it?
It doesn't sound like a can of Raid is going to take care of that either.
Searing pain! Absolute searing pain!
Like, I'm going to keep a can of Raid right alongside my mask in my glove compartment in the event I see one of those Murder Hornets. 2020, man. And it's only May 4th. I hope Ben's right, and Ben generally is right. You know, maybe a year and a half out, we look back on this, and it's just this wild time that we look at, and fundamentally life has not changed. We're back to normal. Hopefully.
Searing pain.
Another hour of you clones. Searing pain. Third hour coming up. Don't go anywhere.